answers.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dante, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to get the information, asking for a quick blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. I am your host, Dave Hodges, and will be with you live for the next 3 hours. Flying co-pilot with me this evening again, as she normally does, is Annie DeRiso, our news director. And in the last half hour of the show, Annie will be bringing us the latest in the news, and we'll be updating everybody on the latest in regard to Jade Helm 15. Special thanks goes out to my good friend and colleague, Paul Martin, for covering for me last week. Yours truly was indisposed with probably the worst stomach virus I've ever encountered in my life, and but we're none worse the wear. This ripped through our family this week, so this was vacation week for the Hodges family, and most of the vacation was spent convalescing. But anyway, we're no worse for the wear, and we have a really good show for you this evening. Also in the last hour, Katie Whalen, our health reporter, will be back with part two of energy vibration healing. And I've been doing a fair amount of reading about that over the past several months, and so I'll be chiming in with my two cents as well. But we've got a great featured guest, and for longtime listeners to the Common Sense Show, this gentleman is certainly no stranger. But we have a lot of new listeners since we have branched out and become independent. And our guest for the first 2 hours is Patrick Wood. He is the author of Technology Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. What a great title, because it's so descriptive of the contents that are in the book. Pat is an author, a lecturer, who has studied elite globalization policy since the late 1970s, when he was partnered with the late Anthony Sutton, and they co-authored one of my very favorite books of all time, Trilaterals Over Washington, Volumes 1 and 2. Pat remains a leading expert on elitist Trilateral Commission policies, as well as their achievement, should I say their nefarious achievements, in creating a self-proclaimed new international economic order. But our focus tonight is going to be on technocracy, what it is, what it means for each of us, why we should be concerned, and as Pat always does, he tells us some practical things we can do to best adjust to the situation. Anyway, Pat, sorry about the long introduction, but we've got a lot of new listeners who aren't familiar with you, and I wanted to bring them up to date. Welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dave. I'm really glad to be here, too.
Well, it's great to have you back. You were actually our very first guest by replay when we switched over here to our new home. And so it's been 3 months, and that's been too long because I wanted to get you on about this book. I know it's all the rage. I keep getting people saying, hey, you got to interview Pat Wood. I heard him on John B. Wells. I've heard him on this show and that show. You've been all over the map with this. Business is good right now with the book, isn't it?
You know, I'm really pushing this whole message, Dave, and it's not really about the book, certainly. It's not about me as an author. The message contained in this book is opening people's eyes to what's going on in the world. I hear this over and over and over again, every day, every week, week in, week out. People are writing me letters or leaving reviews or leaving comments on my website that thank you for the first time I understand how it's all working and coming together. And, you know, I'm not, I want to remove myself a little bit from the message.
Understood.
And say the message is something critical that Americans need to grasp. And my biggest frustration right now, Dave, for all the radio shows I'm doing, for all the, you know, people who are reading the book, the most difficult thing for me right now is to get people to read the book. I don't care how they get it. They can go down to the library and ask the library to buy a copy from Amazon. They'll do it. I don't care if you go get the book that way. I don't care how you get the book. Whether you buy it from me or buy it from Amazon or borrow it from a friend or whatever, getting people to actually read the book right now is the hardest thing that I'm encountering. And I'll tell you what, the ones that are reading it, fantastic response. The ones that are just ignoring it are just going on business as usual, and they don't see the freight train coming right out.
Pat, that's kind of the nature of our society. It's not a reflection on your book or your journalistic abilities. It's a reflection on our society. We get digital news. We want digital news, and we don't like to sit down and read as a culture anymore.
That's right. It really
is. That's unfortunate.
People want it on a bumper sticker. If you can't reduce it to a bumper sticker, don't bother me with having to think about something.
Well, I'm toying with my own idea of a book, and I'm not going to say a whole lot on that tonight, but I'm kind of at the nexus. Do I do a PDF, release it electronically? Do I do hard copy like what you did? And those are the things I'm at right now. But, you know, the bottom line is, Pat, is we really can't worry about people's literacy rates. This is easy to read. It's very well written. It's written so the common man can make sense out of very technological-based terms. And we just have to present the message and hope people care enough about themselves and their families and their country that they'll care to jump into this and find out what they need to be doing.
That's exactly right. And I would just encourage everybody to listen to the testimony of other people who have already read the book and get it and understand it. And, you know, I have to say, too, the John B. Wells interview was really interesting. And I thank you for your part in helping me get introduced to John B. Wells in the first place. But that interview, he felt it really blew him away, first off. And he felt it was important enough to put it up on YouTube. And it's been up now 2 weeks and a couple of days on YouTube. It was a Friday, two Fridays ago we put it up. And it just crossed over 25,000 views tonight. And it's still tracking like crazy, doing about a couple of thousand hits a day. And I'm encouraged by that because even if people won't stop to read, they're at least stopping to view the message. It's a 3.5-hour video, for Pete's sake. Who listens to a 3.5-hour video? But people are listening to it, and they're coming away from it saying, dang, now I see what's going on. And it's really compelling evidence, I have to say. When you see it, it's just like, how can you deny it?
Well, you and I have talked enough through the years. I know how compelling it is, and we're going to really express that in terms of where we're going to go in the next 2 hours. And before we jump into content, I just want to alert our listening audience. I will have this interview up in the morning. And there are no restrictions on who you share it with, where you send it. We do have some copyright restrictions on our program, but we're going to waive those as long as you're not making money on it. You can send that wherever you'd like to whoever you'd like, because we need to get this word out because time is short. Pat, let's start at the beginning. Okay, someone's sitting there in their home and they're saying, okay, I've heard about Pat Wood and I heard this is a good book and I wanted to listen in. Where is a good place to start for the novice?
I think a novice needs to start with this idea that there's nothing really new in history. But the understanding the history, not of the entire world, but at least the history of our nation, is important. And we need to be able to look back in history and connect it to the present, because whatever the present is today, we know it's screwed up. Whatever the present is, it didn't just happen. It didn't just go poof and all of a sudden, like some magic incantation, happened. Obama didn't just happen. He didn't come out of the blue and just poof, there he was like a genie in a bottle. All of these things took time. They all have a historical source. And the more you understand about the historical source, the more you understand what's going on today. And if we get nothing else out of this interview, it would be this. I want people to understand who the enemy is of our nation. Our nation has an enemy. We know that. People think, well, it's the bankers. Well, it's Islam. Well, it's Iran. And well, it's China. Well, yeah, America has an enemy. But the real enemy, the nature of the real enemy and the identity of the real enemy will surprise people. But if we don't know who the enemy is, how on earth can we fight that enemy? And how on earth could we ever win a war if we don't know who we're fighting?
And those points are well taken. And I would venture to say if you walk down the halls of Congress, even those marginally on the take, they can't tell you who the enemy is. So let's start there. If you were to point a finger in a group or an individual, who would you say that we need to be most concerned about?
The group, the core group that represent the most direct threat to our nation, who have brought us most of the trouble that we see today, are members of the elite Trilateral Commission. And some people have heard of this before, some people haven't, I realize, but the Trilateral Commission is a very small group representing North America and Asia and Europe that had as its original goal to create a new international economic order. And the meddling of these people over the decades has given us an economic order, all right, and in one sense it's new, but it's also, at this point, a wrecked, a destroyed, train wreck, if you will, economic order. And, you know, people look around the world at what's going on in Europe and Greece and Italy and China, and they go, holy mackerel, the world's on fire. And it is. You say, why is it on fire? Well, it's because people have been pushing screwball economic ideas for the last 40 years, and now we see the fruit of them. It's just that simple. And as we go into this interview, we're going to see that the economic system that they're trying to push on us is technocracy. It's a brand new economic system that was developed originally back in the 1930s, and specifically in their literature said it was a replacement economic system to replace capitalism. And capitalism is on the chopping block. It's, well, worse than that. It's on the guillotine. Capitalism is targeted to be destroyed by these people and to be replaced by this economic system historically that we know as technocracy.
Is technocracy, when I look at it, and I'm assuming you're talking in part things like carbon credits for money and so forth, you know, value of exchange. To me, I look at this as something that's really close to an oligarchical form of socialism where the wealth just flows upwards and you get the 1% and then everybody else.
You know, it's we relate to things as people. When we try to understand something new, we always try and relate it to something that we already know.
Yes.
We already know communism. We already know socialism. We know fascism. We know Marxism. We've known those things for several years. The mind twister with technocracy is that it's not any of those things. It's something brand new, and it's an intellectual mind twister. It really is. I still have trouble understanding it at times, and I have an economic background. And for people that don't really like economics in the first place, it's like, huh? What are you talking about? But back in the 1930s, capitalism was dead. It really appeared to be dead, at least, and down for the last count. And prominent engineers and scientists in our society decided that since they were the inventors of all the technology that had come into society, that they and they alone were the ones that were able to run society. So they cooked up this alternative economic system that was based on energy instead of money. In other words, they wouldn't value things in terms of supply and demand, in terms of a currency per se, of any kind of currency per se, but they would value things according to energy, an energy currency that they intended to create, and it would be a resource-based economy where the pricing of goods and services would be based on the amount of available energy in that economic society at the time. I realize that's kind of a mind twister, but that's what they intended to do. And if you called a technocrat back in the 1930s a communist, you're likely to get yourself into a fist fight because they hated communists. They vocally hated communists, and basically they said the reason why is because communism is still a price-based economic system. All communism did was they proposed that they should manage the economic system, which they did and failed miserably. But it was still a price-based economic system that communism proposed to manage. Well, technocracy was going to do away with all that stuff. And they were going to create an energy currency that would be given out to everybody in society as a utopian dream, actually. But it would be, the energy currency would be given out to people in society, much like food stamps are given out today. And so everybody would get their allotment of credits that they could spend on things. And they would be assigned, everybody would be assigned a job according to their ability, according to their education, and they would be expected to be happy little campers and work along, and, you know, they'd get their new energy credits in the next period, like a month or a quarter or whatever. And if they didn't use all their credits up by the end of the period, they simply would expire. And, that brings up another interesting point in the economic system. Technocracy makes no provision for savings. It makes no provision for property rights. They assume that, well, you know, they propose that, well, why does anybody need to have property anyway? All property should be held in trust for the common good. Well, you see these kinds of thoughts, Dave, worked out in things like Agenda 21 and sustainable development. It's exactly the same thing that they said in the 1930s. Rewarmed, rehashed, and brought back to the world stage. And Agenda 21 now proposes to do away with property rights. It proposes to kill off capitalism and replace it with what the United Nations is calling a green economy. It's preposterous, absolutely preposterous. When people understand the magnitude of this, Dave, it's like, It's not just that we're all in that big poker game in the sky. It's like this will so radically transform the world that you will not recognize the world if these people get their way. That's how.
Well, this is so encompassing, but it's also so self-limiting. And I think you glossed over this point very, very quickly. Without the ability to accumulate wealth, in other words, you can store for the winter, you can build up over time. The rule of seven in compounding. If you don't have those tools available to you, coupled with the ability to earn wealth through the accumulation of private property through sale and resale, you are doomed to the financial class that you're born into.
That's right. It takes you, really what it does is it takes you right back to the feudal system, but even worse. It takes you back to the dark ages when people were not allowed to have property. All they could do is squat on somebody else's property and try and make enough money that landowner would be happy enough with them to let them stay. But they had to give the majority of their produce to the landowner. All they could keep was just enough to make a meager living. And, you know, just in early, in February, on February 3rd, actually, of this year, which is only, a couple of months ago now, the executive secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. She's like the czar, if you will, of climate change at the UN. Her name is Cristiana Figueres. She's a Costa Rican diplomat. She was quoted in a press conference, and actually she spoke it in English, and it was recorded, and I've listened to the thing myself. This has been accurately transcribed. Let me read you what she said, and just try and wrap your head around this. She said, quote, "This is the first time in history, in the history of mankind, that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution." Close quote. Now, what can you make with that, Dave?
I think that they're telling you that the old is out and the new is here, hence the term New World Order. But I would submit to you, Pat, that this revolution would even go back further and erase all of economic history, because in the past, people had the freedom to become nomadic and be hunting and gatherers. They could engage in being or living or creating a pastoral society, you know, with small animals, small amounts of crop yield. And that's all going to be taken away under these technocrats, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. You will live where they tell you to live. You will work where they tell you to work. And you will consume what they tell you to consume. And basically, your life you will have no input, essentially, for your life, except for maybe some of your leisure time or something, which won't be, you know, very, very productive either for you. But this was the utopia that was spoken of back in the 1930s. And these people were, in my estimation, were crackpots. They were absolute crackpots. They were the mad scientists that you see in the movies and stuff. They either want to blow up the world, or they want to create a Frankenstein or whatever, a race of zombies. These people were prominent engineers and scientists, like at Columbia University, for instance, and they got a hold of this utopian dream, and they just, I don't know if they really understood where they were going with it, if they were just confused, or were they deluded or deceived, but when they started to believe their own lies, they were in big trouble. And today we see the fruit of this. And people wonder, by the way, why is the world economy so screwed up? Why is America so upside down? The government tells us our economy is doing great, yet the middle class is shrinking to levels it hasn't seen in 60, 70, 80 years. You know, what's going on? I can tell you exactly what's going on. As an economist, there are two different economic systems that are fighting each other on the world stage for supremacy.
Before we jump into that, we've only got a few seconds before we go to break, and I want to hold that thought because I think I know where you're going with this, having read the book and having interviewed you before, and I want you to come back to these points, these two competing systems, when we come back from the break. Everybody else, stay tuned. You might want to get your notepad because it's going to get really interesting, and you're going to find out when the smoke clears in America what we're all going to be living in. Stay tuned. We'll see you back here after a word from these sponsors.
Body is extraordinary, despite all the stresses we inflict upon it. Thousands upon thousands of people rely upon Heart and Body Extract to help their body stay balanced. This excellent 100% natural herbal formula helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels, cleans arteries, promotes good circulation, balances cholesterol, and more. HB Extract, paired with healthy lifestyle choices like good nutrition and exercise, can give you a life free of pain, sickness, and fear. Recapture your youthful vitality and experience your body healing itself. Extremely effective, and it starts working in just days. Visit hbextract.com to learn more and to read scores of testimonials from satisfied customers. And we've never increased our price in over 10 years. That makes Heart and Body Extract as great a value now as it was the first day we sold it. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Call 866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I've created a non-electric self-watering food production system that grows nutritious food with almost no effort and at very little cost. It's called the Food Rising Mini Farm Growbox. And the best part is, I show you how to make your own in do-it-yourself videos on the new website, foodrising.org. There, you'll also find freely downloadable 3D object files that you can use to print the key components of the system on your own 3D printer. It's all part of the open source revolution, where we freely share good ideas that empower people to be more self-reliant and practical in a world that's increasingly unpredictable. This Food Rising Grow system will produce food for you even if the power grid fails, because it has no pumps and no complex moving parts. Join the Food Rising Revolution now at www.foodrising.org.
When you think of getting old, what comes to your mind? Spending the last years of your life in a nursing home? Staring out a window? Medicated to keep you docile? Not able to recognize your own kids? Suffering with some dreaded disease until you die all alone? Well, think again. One of the premier doctors in the world, Dr. James Forsythe, wrote the book, Anti-Aging Cures, Life-Changing Secrets to Reverse the Effects of Aging, your key to the real fountain of youth. And Suzanne Summers, the perpetual face of eternal youth, wrote the foreword. As mentioned in the book, Royal Velvet is the most cost-effective, easiest, and complete way to reverse the effects of aging. It's true. So, do you want glowing skin, less wrinkles, thicker hair, less gray hair, your hormones balanced, improved memory, a toned physique, greater energy, less pain and stiffness, as well as benefits too numerous to name? Go to RoyalVelvetNow.com. Click on the rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and within a couple of days, you can be on the path to youthful living. RoyalVelvetNow.com. Your life will never be the same.
The lining of your lungs is supposed to be protected with glutathione to neutralize incoming irritants. In the absence of enough glutathione, your lungs are more prone to irritation. Listen to the real-world results of one man using a powerful glutathione-supporting food.
Hi, my name is Bill O'Brien. I generally suffer through an asthmatic breathing-type situation. My breathing is shallow and generally constricted in the nose and lungs. After consuming One World Away today, I have tremendous energy and also notice my breathing is free. I can feel the air in my left nostril, and it is free all the way to my abdomen, which is pretty remarkable because I rarely get that feeling. Being a singer, I love feeling this unrestricted voice. The only thing new I've actually added to my routine is One World Way. Wow.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's one world, W-H-E-Y.com.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
What makes noise? It's ringing in my ear. What makes noise? And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell. And he's not going to take it anymore. This is The Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome back, and you are indeed listening to The Common Sense Show, and we come to you live every Sunday evening at this time from 9 p.m. to midnight, and that is in the Central Time Zone, and for you night owls out east, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Make sure you join us next week, where we'll be hosting Joseph Meyer, noted economist, and also you're going to be hearing about the first known medical kidnapping of a talk show host. And folks, I'm not kidding. We might even get into that in our health report with Katie Whaling coming up in the third hour. Our guest is Patrick Wood. He's the author of the book Technology Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. And we're in the midst of discussing where technocracy is going. And as you probably know, it's not good. And Pat, when we went to break, you were talking about two competing economic systems.
Well, yes, all I want to say about that is that the capitalism has, free enterprise, let's call it, capitalism, have been around for thousands of years, actually. And we know a lot about capitalism. We know a lot about free enterprise. We know how to analyze it, how to predict it, forecast it, how to understand what happened after things do happen. But this green economy business, this technocracy system, is altogether brand new. And this is an economic system that's in direct competition for supremacy on the world stage. And the two of them are duking it out around the world, including in our country. Capitalism is on the decline, as we well know, and technocracy, the green economy, is on the rise. And it's not just that they're compatible in any way. They're not. They're completely antithetical to each other. It's not even like oil and water not mixing. It's like these are two so opposite systems that it's like matter and antimatter. Wherever technocracy comes into contact with capitalism, there's big trouble. There's decay immediately. There's conflict. And this is why the world is going upside down economically, because these two systems are fighting for the same space. Technocracy at this point is winning, because that's what the United Nations is pushing under the guise of sustainable development, under the guise of climate change, under the guise of Agenda 21 and all the other things that that brings to the table. And when Christiana Figueres comes out and says that the United Nations, and she's the head of the climate change unit there, I mean, she knows, she's like a bigwig. She's the czar of climate change. When she says that for the first time in the history of mankind, the United Nations, are setting about the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that's been reigning for at least 150 years, folks, we need to stand up and pay attention. These people are trying to destroy the very economic lifeblood of our nation and of the world. And if they get their way, they're going to knock us so far back into the dark ages that we will never come out of it.
Do you agree with the notion that Cloward and Piven philosophy must be followed to destroy this country before they can fully usher in this technocracy?
You know, it could happen at any time, I believe, David. I'm not sure how far off we are time-wise. There's still, I think, a little window of opportunity for Americans, at least, to do something about it if they understand who the enemy really is. But I'll tell you what, time is short. And right now, judging by, you know, the number of people that are kind of attaching themselves to this message, I'm not sure that we can get enough traction to make a difference in a short period of time. But I'll tell you what, though, the whole enchilada is on the table right now. Everything is at risk in our world. And, you know, I'm looking at this stuff, and other people are starting to look at it and say, you know what, this is exactly what they're doing. They've been hiding in plain sight. But when somebody like Christiana Figueres comes out and says, you know what, hey, folks, we're going to destroy capitalism, like, you're going to do what? Excuse me? You're going to do what to capitalism? Yeah, we're going to change it. We're going to do something brand new. You'll love it, I promise. You know, it's going to be great. Everybody's going to have money, and we're going to alleviate poverty, and, you know, we're going to do all this great stuff in the world, and it's going to be great for everybody. And you say, excuse me, can you show a little proof or a little evidence that this thing is going to work? They can't show one shred of evidence. They really can't, because they have no evidence. Their science that they're using, you know, they call this a science-based decision using climate change, you know, to scare us into this whole technocracy idea. It's completely based on false science. They have no proof, really. All they have is a lie that they can tell us that we have to believe. So, you know, somebody like Al Gore comes along about 2 weeks ago, and he's talking about climate change and all of us deniers out here, and shame on us deniers, you know, we're blocking progress. And he actually came out, Dave, and said, those climate change deniers deserve to be punished.
Yeah, they're calling for jail time for people who go against the flow on this.
Yeah.
One of the things I discovered, this is serendipitous to your book, but when I was following the money trail on who made money off the Gulf oil explosion, I just happened across Al Gore and a trail of money that led to Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett being the head of the Chicago Climate Exchange, which is no longer in existence, but it's part and parcel to what you're talking about. Do you think this is why Obama was ushered in as the next president despite his relatively unknown status, is because he was already the king of technocracy, at least from a political standpoint?
I think there's a pretty good chance that you could connect some dots there. I don't know how dogmatic I'd get about it, but I do think there's probably some things that make sense. The one thing about Obama that makes him attractive to the technocrats that are trying to run this whole show is that he is completely malleable in their hands. He will do exactly what they tell him to do. He knows how to read a good teleprompter speech. And, you know, the people that they have brought to be beside him, and I should say control him, are basically giving him his entire message, his entire talking, all of his talking points, et cetera. And you'll find that, by and large, those people are members of the Trilateral Commission. Those are his principal talking point authors. And, you know, we could go down the list on, I suppose, people like Susan Rice. She's a national security advisor right now. She's a member of the Trilateral Commission. You've got John Podesta, who just left the president's side to run Hillary Clinton's campaign. The New York Times said that he single-handedly developed the president's climate change policy and all the executive orders that he's just about to write to lock in climate change policy in the United States to try and knock us back to somewhere in the 1800s as far as carbon emissions are concerned. Well, this stuff didn't just come out of the blue, and certainly Obama didn't go into a golf locker room or something and write these policies by himself. No, they were written up by a member of the Trilateral Commission, John Podesta, for crying out loud. This guy is a snake in the wood pile, and he went in there and wrote it up and gave it to Obama and said, here, this is your policy. Go write an executive order and pass it. Just do it. And he's doing it right now. Right this very week will be the week he signs the executive orders implementing these climate change policies that John Podesta's cooked up.
Do you know how extensive these policies are going to be, Pat?
Oh, my gosh. For what I've read so far, Dave, it's absolutely over the top. If there's no stopping him, and at this point I don't know how we can, but because Congress won't stand up to him and reverse these things, they don't even see the problem. If he implements these climate change policies that they're thinking about putting in, it's going to walk us right into the November 2015 conclave with the United Nations. It's a global meeting they're cooking up to implement climate change policies all over the world. And the policies that have been given to Obama to implement here dovetail perfectly into this United Nations meeting that's coming up later this year. And that means that America will slide into third base, ready to make the big run home, I suppose. And we're going to be all perfectly aligned to come into that agreement that the United Nations wants everybody to sign on to.
What are some early warning signs that we should look at coming out of these executive orders where the average person can say, yeah, Pat Wood was really right. Here's an example.
Oh, boy. I guess first you could go look up on the Internet pretty easily John Podesta and the New York Times and the word climate change. You'll find the article that the New York Times wrote last October or November. Claiming they're making the claim that John Podesta was the czar of climate change policy for Obama and that he was single-handedly responsible for doing this. But when they get together at the United Nations later on this year, the implementation of climate change policy is going to require nations to reduce their carbon output by as much as 80% over a period of time. That's inconceivable for an industrialized nation like us. If we were to reduce our carbon emissions in our country by 80%, that would take us back to about 1825 as far as economic development is concerned. Now, the people that lived in 1825, they got along and they lived and they had families and they had businesses and they did stuff. But I'll tell you what, I have no personal desire to adopt a lifestyle circa 1825. And I don't think most Americans do either. That's going the wrong direction. We should be going forward, not backwards.
Well, I think it's also dangerous. Have you looked at any projections on what the effect would be on longevity?
Oh, my gosh. It would put us back, probably lop off 20, 25 years off the average lifespan of most Americans. Let me just make the point that we kind of have a built-in population reduction pattern to this, don't we?
Yeah, you just took the words right out of my mouth, Pat. When we look at this, we're looking at the way Americans will change. We'll stop dying so much from degenerative diseases, and going back to the scourge of infectious diseases. And then you bring in the subject of unsafe vaccines. Oh, I mean, I think the death curve could go up astronomically under these conditions. What about hospital care? What about people that need dialysis or open heart surgery? How is technocracy going to affect that?
Well, you know, it already has. The whole concept of Obamacare basically was modeled after the original plan in the 1930s for health care. And this is what we see in Obamacare. Obamacare is not so much about your health. It's about the data about you. It's about your data, your data points. And so as Obamacare goes along to collect data on you, they're feeding all of that into the master database, a profile on Dave Hodges, a profile on Pat Wood. They know more about us and our expected lifespan and longevity and our patterns, our history, our things we like, things we don't like, whatever. They know more about us than we know about ourselves with this. Well, the collection of data is part and parcel to technocracy, because as an engineer would think about running a factory floor, they would put monitoring capabilities into that factory floor before they even turned it on, because they want to know, are all the parts getting delivered at the right time? Is the thing moving as fast as it ought to? And is the quality, you know, being held up like it's supposed to? So they have ways to gather information on the factory floor. Well, when you talk about society at large being the factory floor, if you will, well, there's no amount of data that they can collect where they will say, oh, we've got enough data to take care of it. No, they don't. There's never a limit to the amount of data that a technocrat can collect about his economic system that he's attempting to control. So Obamacare is about controlling, is about getting a hold of your data and using that to model your life. And people talk kind of in a glib way about things like death panels, and I'm not saying that that's going to happen tomorrow, but people talk about this and they don't realize that the healthcare system is being reduced to the point where you simply are not going to be able to get the health care you got 20 years ago, period, in the subject. You just won't. You look what happened in the Phoenix area here with the VA hospital and the big scandal that produced, that there were actually veterans around the nation, not just here, but were basically put on a death list of people who were not going to get health care, period, no matter what they did. They couldn't even get appointments to come in and talk to somebody. They just died.
I submit it's already happened, and here's the proof I offer. It's anecdotal, but it's from my own physician. Yep. He has informed me, and I've been able to verify this, although I can't verify it's in practice. If you're 70 years of age and you have a minor aneurysm, something that can be surgically worked on and corrected and you can return to full health, you get that done on your 70th birthday. But the moment the clock strikes 12, and you're 70 years in one day, you're ineligible, and all they will do is give you comfort care until your demise.
That's right. Yeah. It's just a horrible nightmare of what's facing seniors right now across our country. It really is. This is the face of technocracy. What they called that back in those days were functional sequences of government. And a functional, for instance, healthcare was a functional sequence. And so they propose to give the federal establishment, or the controllers, if you will, the technocrats, complete control over the operation of the healthcare system. And this is exactly what we have in Obamacare. It's a functional sequence that they have hijacked, if you will, to manage so they can collect the data and stuff to figure out, you know, whether you're worth keeping or not in the long run. It may not have teeth to it today, but Dave, imagine 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road, if we make it that far. Imagine the people that are going to be using this data and what they're going to be doing with it. I don't want to even think about it.
Well, it's not just healthcare we have to worry about. This is also part and parcel to the smart grid that's being implemented all across the country.
It is. The smart grid is a huge data collection effort, and smart grid is part of very much part of technocracy as well. And, because it's based on energy, this would be a good time, if we have time, to lay out the first five requirements of technocracy that were written down in 1934. They're not long, but this is a direct quote. This is what they wanted to do back then. They didn't have the technology. Today we do, and now they're doing it. The first requirement was, quote, register on a continuous 24-hour-per-day basis the total net conversion of energy. There's your smart grid right there. Point number two, quote, by means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load. Well, there's smart grid right there. Point three, quote, provide a continuous inventory of all production and consumption. Point four, quote, provide a specific registration of the type, kind, etc. of all goods and services, where produced and where used. You see, this is all-encompassing. And point number five, quote, provide specific registration of the consumption of each individual plus a record and description of the individual, close quote. You could have written these yesterday, Dave, and it wouldn't have fit today's scenario any better than this does.
Why do you suppose they want a description of the individual, not just their energy use, but things about them?
Because they need it to run the economic system called technocracy. They need all of this data to be brought together into a single place so they can determine what policies to put into place to run the economic system of society. That's what it's all about. This is not a political coup. It's an economic coup. There's not a political system attached to this. These people scoff at politicians. They laugh at them. They did back in the 30s. And politicians are irrelevant to a technocrat. They feel that they're buffoons. They make decisions about technology they don't understand. And they're just incapable of running a technological society. So the only good that a politician has to a technocrat is what the technocrat can get out of them to enable them to do their technocrat things. That's why, in my strong opinion, that's why the Trilateral Commission hijacked the United States executive branch in 1976 with the election of James Earl Carter so that they could get a hold of the economic mechanism to convert the world into technocracy. And they've done a dang good job so far.
When you and Anthony Sutton were writing the Trilateral Commission volumes 1 and 2, at what point did it dawn upon you that this transformation in our economy that you so well detailed and the absconding of political power, when did it occur to you that this is where this was all headed?
You know, until I understood technocracy several years ago, I didn't get the full picture in my own head. On the other hand, going back to late 1970s when Tony and I were writing about this, we knew where this was headed in terms of messing over the rest of the world for the sake of this global elite. And I'll tell you what, we nailed it to the wall. I'm in process, by the way, of retypesetting Trilaterals Over Washington to bring it back into publication. And God willing, it's going to be back in print again in probably another 2 or 3 months. But this book has to be put out again to show people this didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened back then. The evidence was on the table, what they were trying to do and how they were trying to do it. And I'm not bitter in any way about my experience as a young man. But I will say one thing to anybody who might have listened to us back then and laughed at us. I just want to say one thing. We told you so. We told you so. I hate to use that phrase for a lot of reasons. We told them so, Dave. We wrote about it. We wrote it out. We talked about it. We debated members of the Trilateral Commission face-to-face on radio, on national radio even. And we told the American public and academia and the political establishment what these people would do. And even Barry Goldwater told him in his book with no apologies. And you know what? It was all there, and nobody paid attention to us.
I did.
And now we're four, well, you did. Here we are, 4 years down the road, and we're worse off today than we've ever been in our whole live-long life.
Yeah, you're right about that. I tried to share this with some of my colleagues at work, and I was labeled a John Bircher. And all I was talking about was the control of the media, the control over the economy through subsidiary holdings and interlocking boards of directorate, all the things that you and Tony talked about in that book. And it was very down to earth, very matter of fact, and today very non-conspiratorial. But in that time, in the late 70s, early 80s, when you dared talk about this stuff, you were a nutcase. And that's how I got cast, simply for bringing up the contents of your book.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. They won that round, I have to say, because of the control of the media that they had. And I suppose that you're aware that our book was blacklisted nationally by the largest book chain back then, B. Dalton Bookseller. They flat out blacklisted our book after I was on the Larry King Show with the executive director of the Trilateral Commission, Charles Heck. I debated him nose to nose for 3 hours with Larry King on national radio, and the day after that debate, I got a call from B. Dalton Bookseller saying, "We want your book. We don't know what you said, but everybody's asking for it all over the country." And I expressed them books. Never heard back from them. 2 weeks later, I call them and say, "Well, we're not going to carry your book, but we might special order it." And then I found out that they sent out a memo to every stinking store in the country saying that the book was out of print and the publisher was out of business. And that was the end of our relationship with national, with any kind of national distribution on our book. And we conveniently found out, by the way, that the parent company that owned B. Dalton Booksellers had a member of its board of directors who was a member of the Trilateral Commission. So there you go. So they put the hammer down on us.
Well, when you bring this back into publication for redistribution, we're going to help you sell it. Because
cool.
this was one of the molding experiences of my young life, which really woke me up to what was coming on. We're going to step aside for our top of the hour break, and we come back, we're going to tie this into a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to solidify what the smart grid is going to mean to you and I. We're also going to get into the nefarious topic of transhumanism. So you don't want to go anywhere, folks. And like I said, class will be in session after the top of the hour. You might want to get your notepad and your pencil, and we'll see you on the other side.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800. Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.